The topic tonight is creative role changes. I have arbitrarily dropped after retirement from the title and would like to think that perhaps in that way it could apply to any and all of us. My role changed a bit 3 years ago when I left the parish ministry for the nursing home or care center ministry. And I noticed that many of the folks that are up here have had creative role changes of one kind or another. For example, down in the lapidary, Dorothy Bennett, an educator for 41 years and a lapidarian for the last 13 or so. Yeah. And many others on the staff, I'm sure. So the topic is creative role changes, and that can be a little bit slippery, but that's all right. We'll work on that and see what happens. By the way, I'm Chaplain David Schroeder. One time I came up to a resident and said, "I'm Chaplain David," to which she replied, "That's too bad." I would be very disappointed tonight if we didn't have at least one good laugh.
I heard you tell that before, and I couldn't tell whether she was sympathizing with you or with the people that you minister to.
I get no respect in the homes either. Our panel of experts, though I don't really want to say it that way, these, as those looks are reaffirming, we're simply going to share some things that will hopefully get us started, and then we'd like to involve you and learn from one another. In terms of an objective for the evening, I think if someone left tonight and said, "That gave me a new idea," or "Gave me something to think about," or "Maybe I could make an adjustment in something that I do or a goal that I have," then I think the evening would be well worthwhile. Our panel includes, to my right and your left, Reuben Spanaus from Seattle. Reuben has had a varied ministry in a number of areas, particularly revolving around social ministry issues, and has been very active in retirement. And we're delighted to have him with us tonight. And then Ann Smith-Kors from Santa Barbara, California. Ann has been active in the hospice movement. And I can share with you at this point, I guess, that she was chosen the Hospice Volunteer of the Year last year. I have my sources. All right. And Joyce Harter from Northfield, Minnesota. Joyce is the one that gave the slide showing this afternoon about her liturgical weaving business, which I found very interesting. And then Paul Bowe from Deronda, Wisconsin. Did I say it correctly?
Right.
Paul, too, has had a very active life in the areas of social ministry and has remained active in the church in his years of retirement, and has some concerns about the New Lutheran Church that he would like to share with us in a little later. I would like to start with a couple of quotations. The first is from the service that we just shared together, which I thought were wonderfully appropriate to the theme for tonight, creative role changes. "Grant us the courage of Ruth to leave behind the old and familiar, the hope of Jeremiah to invest in the future, and the strength of Esther to take risks on behalf of others." I think that's a wonderful thematic statement about what this Holden Forum is all about. And also a brief quote from all people, John Updike, who said, "You cannot get anywhere without leaving somewhere else." And also a quote of Goethe, the great German, which I want to use to tie in a bit with some of the themes that I've been presenting, including the dying to live theme. "As long as you do not know how to die and come to life again, you are but a sorry traveler on this dark earth." And the reason that I inject that theme is that any change, I believe, at whatever age, is a kind of a death which could then precede a resurrection. And so as I'm beginning to understand it, life is a great number of deaths and rebirths. I think what I'll do, and I want to encourage our speakers to project their voices for the sake of our hearers. And let's just go around once very quickly. If you'll say your name again and a bit of the baggage, shall I say, with which you come tonight, and perhaps the area that you'd like to stress. Just a minute or two, Reuben, and then we'll come back to you.
Okay. I'm Reuben Spunhouse. I've had my role changes from a teacher to a parish pastor to a chaplain to a social work administrator, and now as a full-time volunteer. Of course, I'd like to talk about how a person can be a full-time volunteer.
All right. Thank you, Reuben.
I'm Ann Smith Cause. I was a registered nurse and a midwife. I did my training in England, and then I came to America and have worked in intensive care and in administration in nursing. And then I was lucky enough to retire from nursing 5 years ago, and I'm now working with, volunteering with hospice.
Yeah. I'm Joyce Harder from Northfield, Minnesota, and have the complete joy of having a lot of my abilities being used through a business of creating work for our churches. And I went from being a mother and housekeeping, pastor's wife, all of those busy activities, to a back to school and then a teaching career for 10 years. And when the business began, I was literally teaching full-time and weaving full-time, and asked the Lord which I should be doing, and it was obvious that the liturgical weaving business was what I should be turning towards doing. And so that's what I've pursued in the last 16 years.
All right.
I'm Paul Bowe. And my wife and I retired 7 years ago, but we've been involved in quite a few things since that time. The thing I'd like to comment on tonight is that 2.5 years ago we joined a group called Mission Discovery in the American Lutheran Church. It's a group of about 30 people around the country who each are delving into some area of life that normally doesn't fall within the scope of the mission of the church, and seeking to find better ways in which to reach out in the name of Christ to touch the lives of people.
Thank you, Paul. I'm going to ask each of the presenters to take about 5 minutes or so to tell a little more about where they're coming from, and sharing their experiences, and then after each of them have shared, we will open the forum up to everyone. So Reuben, if you would get us started, please.
Well, I suppose a good way to start is to express my philosophy, call it theology of retirement. It's my firm conviction that when we stop working on a job and drawing a paycheck, that the good Lord doesn't take away our talents and abilities and opportunities to serve other people. So when I retired according to plan 9 years ago. I didn't follow my own advice, the advice that I had given to other people in retirement workshops, that you should plan ahead and have something ready to do when you retire. But rather, we moved from one community to another, from Chicago back to Seattle, which was our favorite home. And we had some things to do there for a while. And then I started being open to opportunities as the Lord would present them to me. Because one of the things I had found in the role changes in my active working life was that I wasn't always seeking changes, but God opened opportunities to me. And the same thing happened, of course, in retirement. The first major activity came about because Olive, my wife, was a member of the Lutheran Catholic Dialogue team in the Puget Sound area, and came one evening after I picked her up after the meeting. We had dinner together, and while we were waiting for our food to be served in the restaurant, she said, "You know, we just can't do this as a committee anymore. We need a staff person, but we don't have any money." I said, that sounds pretty good, because I had a lot of ecumenical interest to start with. And so I said, "Well, who do I talk to?" And she said, "Well, the chairman of our committee is Bruce Pond." And so I called Bruce and I said, "Well, here are my qualifications. I'm applying for a job." He said, "Well, we can't pay you." I said, "Well, can you give me $100 a month for expenses?" And he said, "Yes." I said, "Fine." He said, "You've got somebody if you want them." And I worked at that for 2 years. Meanwhile, I got involved in United Way, and one of my very strong convictions about volunteer work, particularly for Christian people, is that you ought to devote approximately the same amount of effort to community affairs as you do to church affairs. Because unless we as Christians express ourselves and work in the community about us, as well as in the church, we're surely not letting our light shine very bright. So I got involved in United Way and have been involved very actively ever since on things like allocations committee and planning committees and survey groups and training programs and the like. I had also made myself available to the National Council on Accreditation to do accreditation of social agencies. And I was very specific that I didn't limit myself or didn't even try to get into the Lutheran system, because I felt I wanted to work in the broader field of social welfare. Well, things developed along that line. Then I got back into education when the Lutheran Catholic Dialogue thing came about. It was finished because I had done some consultation for Lutheran High School and pointed out some areas where they needed some help financially and administratively. And the principal and one of the board members said, "Well, if you know so much about it, why don't you come over and help?" Well, I went over for a couple hours and it lasted for 5 years. One of the interesting things I've learned, and I think I knew it ahead of time, was that there's a lot of volunteer work that a person does without compensation. And I think it ought to be done that way. There are other times when a person is essentially in a staff position where everyone else is paid, that you are not effective unless you also have a staff role. And so after about 6 months at Lutheran High School, I said, "Well, you know, this isn't working. I'm not able to carry out the things that I know how to do. I want to go on the payroll, and I'll take one day's pay a month." And so that put me on the payroll, and all of a sudden the administrative situation was altogether different. I think it was one of the reasons I also said to the Lutheran Catholic Dialogue, "Give me $100 a month to pay for my gas and my lunches." And I know it's contrary to some people thinking about volunteer work, but I think I have found, and I know other people say too, you can be much more effective. Well, that just gives you some kind of an idea of how a person becomes a full-time volunteer and can divide interests and work among several fields.
Thank you.
When I was nursing, I found that there was very little time to spend with the dying person. I'd been able to do it when I was delivering babies because it was a one-on-one. But in the general rush of the hospital, you had to go on with all the other tasks that had to be performed. And so I thought that when I was retired from nursing for a salary, I would like to do something with the dying, and it was to hospice I turned. First of all, to get into the hospice program, I went to a series of lectures which was open to the public. There were lectures telling about the care of the dying, helping with the families, different ethics about the dying given by different ministers. We learned about the Jewish and the Catholics and the Christian Protestants. And then I put in my application, had an interview, and then we had further training in these fields so that we were ready to go out with our patients. Our hospice has got various methods of which they serve the public. We have bereavement counselling twice a month. And this is for folks that have lost someone dear to them. It could be a spouse or a sister or a child. We have Make Today Count, which is for people that are suffering a terminal illness so that they can meet with other persons in the same situation and exchange ideas and how they're coping with everyday living. We have a children's world. This is staffed mainly by people that have lost a child, and it is for bereaved parents and families. It may be a baby that's died with sudden infant death syndrome. It may be a 22-year-old that's committed suicide. Just the whole gamut of deaths in children. And then we have the patient care, and we have registered nurses and home health aides who go out into the home to care for the dying patient. The way the volunteers can help are numerous. We can answer the telephones at the hospice building, do the mailings, clean the equipment. We go babysit the houses when there's a funeral so that they won't be robbed when they're away. And then, of course, we're out in the homes. I'll tell you a little bit about some of the patients I've been with. But my first patient was called Mary. And when I was given the assignment to Mary, I was told that she had 2 weeks. Well, Mary lived 18 months. Mm-hmm. And Mary had a quality of life in that 18 months that perhaps she wouldn't have had if she hadn't had some volunteers to help her. Mary was in and out of the hospital in that 18 months. But I think one of her greatest thrills during that time was that the Olympic torch came through Santa Barbara. And Mary went to watch the Olympic torch go by. And then the bearer that had been carrying that torch that had been passed on gave her the torch, and she held it high there. And it was just wonderful. We used to spend time at the beach having tea and talking. And then there were times when I'd just sit by her bedside. And Mary had a little dog called Benji, which was a stuffed animal, but it was just her little favorite. And the day before Mary died, she said to me, "Anne, will you take Benji and look after her for me?" So Benji sits by my bed and reminds me a lot of Mary. Then some patients we see just for one day. There was an old Norwegian fellow, and I went out to him, and he said, "I want to talk today." So I sat by his bed, and for 2 hours he told me the story of his life. And then I said goodbye to him, "I'll see you again tomorrow." But there was no tomorrow for him. And so he had someone that would sit there and listen, and probably made him feel that it wasn't too bad after all. There is sometimes just one of us on a case, and sometimes there are five of us or six of us, because sometimes we're giving respite care for a spouse to go to work. And so we can be in each day with the terminally ill patient, or we could just be there once a week just so that the family member that's caring for them can go off and have their hair done or go out for lunch. That's just a couple of my patients. Got lots of, my current one is a bereavement patient and she's 87. And she's learning to adjust without her husband. But it's in all volunteer work, you get 100 times more than you ever give, and it's the most rewarding thing. And it would be great if somebody would offer to be volunteers with hospice.
Thank you very much, Anne. That was, it's very touching. Joyce?
I feel a little bit difficult being here tonight because of being more from the business standpoint. But I guess that's part of, well, I know that's part of our life. And many of us have been in business roles of one nature or another. And there are many forms that business take, and especially in our age bracket, how we deal with them and what we do with them in our retiring years. My work has been just pure joy in its development of serving churches throughout the country and designing, custom designing work for them. I have felt very strongly from the beginning that my creative forces have been so totally used in all that I have done through this work. And I would wish for many other people that they would have that tremendous feeling of having their potential so totally used in what they have seen develop and grow. And so from that standpoint, I'm very, very thankful for the talents that I have and the abilities that I've been given and how they have been developed through this weaving business that has just grown. And when I began it, I didn't ever imagine how large it would become or could become. I just knew that there was a need and that I was able to begin filling that need. But one of the other joys that besides being able to design work and seeing all of your designs come to life and the weavings and then going and delivering them sometimes to a church or receiving photographs back from that church of that work on their altar and pulpit and lectern and the clergy stoles. Besides all of the joy of that, I've also had the fun of developing working with others and having other people work for me and working with them and seeing their abilities develop. One of the things that I determined early was that my weaving business couldn't get bigger. I couldn't satisfy the demands for the work that I was being asked to do unless I had some others helping me. And so it grew from 1 to 2 to 3 to 4, and it's gone on. I now have 7 weavers that do work for me and weave to my designs. And then I have a secretary and a person that measures warp and does a lot of the finishing work for me. And I've had a teaching background, and so that I've always enjoyed the teaching end of this very much. I missed teaching full time the first year, and then I began to realize that on a one-on-one basis with teaching someone to measure warp for me or to thread loom for me, I was helping that person learn how to do something along this line. And so with the having other weavers do my work and carrying out my designs on their looms and their homes, I have begun to provide work for some that wouldn't otherwise be able to do this. For instance, I have a young pastor's wife in Wisconsin who weaves for me. I have several in small communities where it's not possible for them to have other employment, yet they love to weave. They have a good piece of equipment that they have invested money into, and unfortunately our public doesn't want to pay a lot for handcrafted placemats and wall hangings, so that it has been a possibility for good weavers to receive a sufficient remuneration for their work in their own homes. So it really has developed into a cottage industry as such. I've had two retired women who are weaving for me. One is a retired librarian from McAllister College in Minneapolis or St. Paul, and the other is a pastor's wife over in Wisconsin that does work for me. And others, one is a part-time art teacher up in northern Minnesota, and it's just been fun to find them and develop this relationship with them. Some of the weavers that I have found that I've been working with are beginners, and they realize that they have to learn quite a bit before we can produce quality work for our churches. And so it's been a matter of working with them and developing their skills through the years. And that's been a fun time or enjoyment too, to a certain extent. You also can have some headaches to it. But I think those are the things that I'd like to share with you, that here was something that I never really dreamed of could happen, and with what I was doing with my life. And then I got into this business, and it has grown far beyond measures that I'd ever thought it would. And then the interaction with the people that are helping me. And then to add to that, I have tried to work with people in the churches to have an interaction with the groups within the churches as to what they particularly want. And because I've wanted this always to be a custom design element, I try to have them study symbolism and come back to me with information then that I develop in designs that they can, that looks right with their church setting. So it's a different bent than theirs, but at least it gives you a little idea of some other creative roles that we can play.
How long have you had the business?
16 years the business has developed over that period of time. As I said, it started while I was still teaching full-time, and it became a decision process. My husband was moving to, well, we were moving to northern Minnesota, and he was taking a two-church parish up there, and it became evident to me that I needed to go on and develop the business full-time and leave off teaching. You don't get teaching jobs up in a small community in northern Minnesota too easily. So.
Yeah. Thank you, Joyce.
Yeah.
Paul.
A couple of years ago, as I said, Carl and I were invited to join this group called the Mission Discoverers. Actually, the name that we use for ourselves is called Probers. We're supposed to probe different aspects of life. The probe that Carola and I inherited, which had been done by another person, a young person, by the way, a person in her 30s prior to our coming into it, is on aging and changing. Aging and changing. And we are attempting not to find ways to serve elderly people. There are lots of activities around the country and in the church and so on that serve the needs of elderly people. That's not the purpose of this probe. The purpose of this probe is to attempt to find ways where retired persons, older persons, can find ways to serve and find ways to be active in involving themselves with other people, and especially with the needs of other people. or in ways in which they can serve the church. Well, we're starting a new Lutheran church. Those of you who are Lutherans are quite aware of that, that we're starting a new Lutheran church. And this new Lutheran church has made some very fine statements about its commitment to justice. We've had some sessions on that, and we had one yesterday, where we talked about the commitment to inclusiveness, to bringing women, people of color, youth, and so on, groups of people who ordinarily are not within the power structures and the influential structures of the church. We were just reading, Carl and I, as we were in the reading room over in the community, in the village center over here, the newspaper room, and Corolla showed me a little women's magazine published by a group of concerned women in the Lutheran Church, which pointed out how women have been so badly left out of the decision-making aspects of the life of the church, have been really in a servant role, but not in a in the role of leadership and decision-making and the like. And so it is also with other minority people, youth, and so on. Well, it occurred to some of us that maybe some of us older people in the church might be able to keep an interest in the justice issues of the church. The church has committed itself to justice. The church has committed itself to working with the oppressed. The church has committed itself to serving those whose needs are not being met by in other ways. And some of us have been in the church long enough, and we concluded that older people might have been in the church long enough to have remembered how the church has made these kinds of statements, how the church has made these kinds of commitments in the past, and how so frequently they have never been carried out. And so we have begun, and I say just begun, because we're only just starting. We have begun to write letters to people around the country whom we have heard of, who we think are interested in justice issues, and who are particularly interested in the way the church carries out its commitments to social justice and to the needs of people and to the support of the oppressed. So we are writing to people, and we've sent a little questionnaire now to about 60 people so far around the country, asking them if they would be willing to join in some kind of a coalition of older people who are concerned for justice, who might be interested in developing a news media that we could share between ourselves, who might be interested in developing ways in which older people in various parts of the country and various synods of the new church can observe how the church is carrying out its commitments, how we can perhaps begin to share this knowledge, and then to speak up in one way or another, in writing, in making presentations, in workshops, or other ways that may yet be discovered. The one thing about us who are retired is that most of us have gone past the days when we need to buck for position. Yeah. We've gone past the days when we need to worry about our reputation, or we need to worry about whether we're going to voted into some kind of an office or anything like that. It's a marvelously freeing and liberating kind of thing. I spent most of my career as an executive. You're always looking over your shoulder when you're an executive. At this stage in life, who you don't have to worry about that kind of thing. I almost said who cares, but I shouldn't say that. I do care. But, anyway, this is what Carl and I are doing now, and we think that it may at least be a way in which some of us who are older can help to influence the future course of the church.
Thank you, Paul. Just one clarification. The probers as such will come to a conclusion, is that right?
Yes, right.
At the end of this year and as the new church begins.
Yeah.
Hopefully, but you want to continue some of those concerns, but in a little different...
The mission developers, or the probers as we call ourselves, is not directly included in the new church. The new church has set up in its commission on outreach, or division of outreach, a slot called mission developer. But nobody knows what that's going to be, what form it's going to take, who's going to be involved with it, or anything else. So next week, we're having the last meeting of this probers group. But we think that out of that will come some very good things, and we will keep this effort going. We started calling it the Over the Hill game. We thought that didn't sound very impressive, so we're looking for a new game.
Yeah. Thanks to each of you for sharing in such a special way. I think that it proved just a special balance to the way that it was presented. If you have specific questions to Reuben or Ann or Joyce or Paul, that would certainly be in order. Or if there's just something that you'd like to share at this point, but I would like to open it to the entire group at this time. Any specific questions that you might have?
I'd be real interested in hearing some of the stuff you people are involved in.
Yeah. Tell us a little bit about the role changes that you...
As I look around, it seems to me that these people must be involved in some interesting things. And maybe none of them are retired. I don't know. or near retirement.
Yeah. I'm retired.
You look retired.
I think he's just tired.
There was a hand or pointed over here.
Yes, they were pointing at me.
Why was that?
I was going to crawl into the chair when you weren't looking. Where do I start? We've been married almost 40 years, and in those 40 years, I've never worked outside the home because I've never had time. I've done too much volunteer work, besides maintaining a big home. And so in the last few years, our life has settled down through many situations that were very time consuming and so on. And so this last year, we thought, gee, we're finally going to have time to do what we want to do. Huh? Wrong.
A lot of people say that.
About 6 years ago, I became involved with a local organization in Seattle called the Northwest Senior Craftsmen, and those of you who live in the Pacific Northwest are perhaps familiar with their shop down on Pier 70 on the waterfront. It started about 15 years ago as an outlet for seniors' help.
It's a non-profit corporation, operates a store, and any senior citizen who can make something of saleable quality may join.
There's about 300 members. Well, I got involved in this through some crafts that I felt like I would like to try to retail, and those didn't sell. But they also ask you, if you have time, would you please volunteer, because the store is staffed 2 shifts a day with 2 people each shift, and 7 days a week. So of course we volunteered, naturally. The next thing we know, they found out that he had done some bookkeeping in the field of education when he was in, and so he got hooked. And the manager, who was a retired Lutheran pastor, by the way, which was incidental, but anyway, he had a heart attack and Frank had a job. So then in the course of this, he got out of that and gave it back to Ed because Ed got better. And we thought, at last, this is it. You know, we were going to have time to do what we want. And then they needed a new shop manager. And it was sort of the squeaking wheel syndrome, because we sat down there and muttered about what it looked like and so on and so forth. And so there were a lot of the unhappy people who coerced me to do it. So here I am, for the first time in my life, working outside of my home, managing this craft shop. I had no idea I ever knew how to do this, and I'm still not sure.
And I still volunteer.
Yes. The pay is wonderful, you know, because we aren't making enough money to pay anybody but the part-time bookkeeper. But it is interesting and it's fun, and the people are wonderful. There is nothing like meet people.
What is the name of the group again?
The Northwest Senior Craftsmen.
It sounds like you are doing what you want to do.
Sure, I get to knit. Any excuse. We have all kinds of crafts. And you never know what you're going to have. It's what that person wants to make. And so you try to, you set up a display. When we first took over, We first took over in June, and like I say, it was a situation where we sort of had to encourage somebody to resign and have somebody waiting in the wings to take over, and there I was. And so we were going to change the window displays, and we put in this whole window display on one side, and we have a lady that makes wonderful nylon sock baglings. They're just adorable.
They are cute.
And so I had two rows of those, and the window had mullet, what do you call them, mullet? Anyway, he put shelves on, so he made it like
shadow
boxes, and each doll was in a window. And it worked so well, except they kept selling the display. Every time I came in, there were dolls gone, and the lady couldn't make them fast enough to get them in. So it switched over to teddy bears for a while.
Did you have a question, Paul? No. Thank you for sharing.
I guess I'd like to respond a little bit to that, since my area of crafts and all relates to that. I have seen other, you know, senior citizens groups and that in other parts of the country, and I think it's a wonderful thing to have happen. But as you're, just like you're describing, it becomes a trap in some ways for the people who work with that, and I think that's unfortunate because
ours is different from the senior centers where they play bingo and so.
Oh yeah, I remember that. No,
people get 60% back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but co-ops or cooperative efforts like that are you know around the country, and it's been a fine thing. I made a statement this afternoon that I think is has occurred in this country. Our crafts, you know, through the medium of craft fairs and things of this nature, have finally become to be accepted. Handcrafted work has come to be accepted in our homes, and now we can begin to accept it in our churches, and it's being sought out for churches. But you see, this has had to come into our homes, and people have been have to understand that handcrafted work has a value in itself, and we don't have to go to the store and buy multiples or something just like something else and expect it to be perfect. There's a tremendous element of handcrafted work that is just needs to be sought out, bought by senior citizens as well as all citizens, and paid a fair price for to the craftsman who's working in that medium. And I can't say anything stronger than it really is a necessary part that needs to be addressed.
What are some of the rest of you doing? Some changes that you've made and perhaps discoveries about things that you could do that you never dreamt you might get into? Why is Emil smiling?
He's here, I think. That's why he's smiling.
Yeah. Well, I guess I can say that I retired, sort of, in May, in 1999. And one of the reasons we did it at that particular time was because we had 9 years ago, I think, we had been to Holden Village. And at that time, we thought, well, it'd be sort of nice to volunteer, you know, and you know, stay here a while and work and as volunteers. And knowing that the place would run on that anyway. And then I think it was sometime last fall, or even earlier maybe, where we read that Holden needed volunteers, and then we had thought in terms of a short term, maybe like the summer or something like that, And then we also saw where they needed long-term volunteers, and there were positions there that were needed that we thought we could fill. But we were tied on with a house that we had bought and were making payments on, and we figured we couldn't afford to retire and make house payments. So, and yet I was at 14 and 65. In fact, I passed it in a big brush.
Would you care to explain that?
Before I knew it, I was 67. And then all of a sudden, our house sold. And that was about last December. Right then we knew that if they would accept us at Holden Village, we would apply.
We needed a home.
And we put the wheels in motion for that. And then once we were accepted at Holden Village, then we knew when we would retire from what was my occupation. And I was a parish pastor in Iowa. And I had thought all along, of course, that retirement would be great if I could afford to do it, you know, because I have so many interests. There are a lot of things I like to do, and of course, Danette has got ever-consuming interest. And so, when the time came, of course, to actually retire from the very least, I found that it was really not as easy as I thought it was going to be. I mean, I was really enjoying the ministry. I was enjoying myself. I felt really that I was, in many ways, at my peak, hopefully, mentally at least, and able to minister in certain areas much better than I had ever been able to. And it was really hard to quit. Then you get attached to a congregation. It becomes sort of a love affair. And at least most of the time.
I'm a love gate.
There are times, you know. They called me to that parish when I was age 60. And that time, that parish was looking for somebody who was around age 35. No, so I thought I'd share story, that with you, that sometimes there is hope for people over 50 or whatever, you know. And but anyway, when we did retire then, it was fortunate in a way that we had some direction to go at that particular time, because I wasn't quite ready yet to just go fishing. Or whatever you do. And so we volunteered for Holden, not knowing what we were doing, perhaps in one way, knowing exactly what we were doing. Something we had really planned, and things were just, in that sense, they were going according to plan. And the advantage I have is that I do have varied interests, and some modest abilities, or whatever you might call it. I mean, I'm interested in various fields, music or in mechanics. So I ended up as printer here at Holden Village. Jeanette ended up with what she has been doing all along, I mean, crafts. That's basically our story. Now, after Holden, we volunteered for a year, by the way, so we're hoping to weather the winter until next June. Yes, we thought about that too. We
yeah.
Yeah, if we can make Iowa, we can make it here.
Yeah, there's a question here.
Yeah. I'm wondering what the new church has, if it has in its design any place for short-term volunteer through the various agencies. For example, we've had, I know they've had teachers that have gone to New Guinea or whatever you have on occasion, but there are people, educated people, that may like to to give of their talents, or surveys within areas for planning new churches or what have you.
Paul, do you have any information on that?
No, I have no information at all. In fact, I don't think the new church has gotten far enough along yet to be able to answer that question.
And when it should be made available. So
this is something that I think you ought to communicate to whoever. I don't know for sure.
To the bishop, maybe.
I suppose to your bishop, maybe in your new synod or wherever you are, that you hope that the new church will develop ways of utilizing volunteers. I think the programmatic elements of the new church are all in flux at the present time, and they're up for grabs. And I think that this is the point at which we can all influence the direction of the new church.
Well, when I first retired, I had that in mind, and
sure.
That you have to have a handle. Sure.
I don't think anybody knows yet at this point whether that's a viable thing.
Will be.
Some of those things may slip between the cracks, too, at least for a while, until a little more organization happens.
Some people, whether they're educators or they're professionals or they're trained, skilled workmen, can be used. They may begin, like here, you get your boarding room and that. Mm-hmm. And your transportation
excellent.
There, whether it's just a new to North Carolina or it's to South Africa.
I think part of what Paul is saying is don't wait for someone to say, don't wait for the brochure to come out, but talk to people now and see what can be done. Yeah, I appreciated what Emil shared because I think Holden often has a ministry in terms of some of these transitions, that many of the folks on the staff are kind of between places and whatever, and that's a wonderful kind of thing, and it's a wonderful place to be, I think, during that middle period. There was another hand here. Yes.
I have a question, whether any of the people here have experienced role changes within the home. Mm-hmm. Where, I'm thinking of friends of ours where the husband retired and the wife took a job.
Wants to go on working.
And so he became the homemaker. And that's fine. It happens with younger couples a lot these days, and where you have the house husband and gets the kids to school and back afterwards, and she's the breadwinner. Well, in this family, the husband got so good and he rearranged the kitchen, you know. And she said, "What are you trying to do? Take over my kitchen?" And then she realized it really wasn't her kitchen. It was theirs.
Yeah.
But I wondered if this was happening in any of the...
Would anyone care to comment on
good point.
On that? Certainly is.
Yes. Being a house husband is fine until Mama retires. When Mama retires, then you got a problem again.
Yes.
I'd like to hear more about that.
Enough said.
Enough said. Yeah. Up above.
Well, what I have to share is a little different. My husband Ken and I do some volunteer work through the church, but we also have. We decided to become freelance writers when we retired, and many people have a desire to write, and if you wait till you retire, that's all right too. Your desire is still there, going very strong. So I took a class at the community college in how to become a freelance writer, and you know, where to put your name on the paper and how to type it out and that sort of thing. And we started writing and started with articles, little articles, and they started selling, and so we kept writing and writing, and we've done this now for several years. Each morning he goes out to his office and I go to my little office, and we write, and it's very relaxing and very enjoyable, and got to the point where over in the bookstore here, you have 4 of Ken's books and 2 of mine, so it's fun.
What are they?
It takes lots of persistence, I assure you, and you have to be very thick-skinned when those rejections come back, but they come back, and you spend lots of money on postage.
These are the Ericsons from Eugene, I believe.
Yes, Ken and Laura.
What are the names of the books?
It sure is fun. Ken has Please Lord Untie My Tongue, and The Power of Praise, The Power of Communication, and Christian Time Management. And I have a booklet, The Adventures in Solitude, and a full-length book, Leah, A Love Story.
And when you said office, you meant in the house, I imagine.
Yeah,
yes,
at home.
You did your work there at home.
Yeah,
Wouldn't that be fun to get your own book published?
It's fun, I assure you. Very fun.
I'm Bob Harder, the husband of Joyce Harder.
Don't say the Weaver's husband, because this is what he's...
I just retired as a pastor, officially as of July 1st, a little bit later than you know. But about 5 years ago, Joy and I've been serving them as full-time pastor for actually 30 years. And we decided that rather to wait until the end of our my ministry, after having lived in parsonages all our life, our married life, that we would have what we call a pre-retirement adventure. And that would be to leave the full-time ministry and move to Northfield, where we wanted to retire to and to have our home there. And rather than not have a wait and then after retirement say, well, now where are we going to live, et cetera, and having lived in parsonages, no equity, et cetera. So what we decided to do was to move to Northfield. We had property there and have a home built for our eventual retirement. And I went from being a full-time pastor, when we moved down there, our only income was Joy's business, income from the business. But very soon after that, I was asked to be a part-time chaplain at the Northfield Retirement Center, which I still am. And also later on, I had the opportunity of doing interim pastor work, which is to work with congregations after they lose their pastor until they get a new pastor. And I've been 4 of those over the last 5 years. So I've been able to use my ministerial skills and experience in that phase of it, along with doing work at the retirement center similar to yours, they've only on a part-time basis. And combining these two kinds of ministries, essentially I've ended up with being a full-time pastor, but for these two different phases. Before I retired, I told people that, well, they always ask me, are you retired? And I said, no, I'm not retired, which I wasn't. And I was still doing these things. And I still can, after my retirement, I still can be an interim pastor, and I can still continue to do part-time chaplaincy work. I mean, it doesn't mean I have to stop that. But before, and I said, well, I'm a shy retiring pastor. Now, after July 1st, I'm a shy retired pastor. But that's a change of role to go from full-time pastor to a situation which you didn't even have any work at first, but then going into this part-time chaplaincy and then into the interim pastor work. So I found that very stimulating, and get to use your abilities, your experience, and also be able to minister to people, to congregations and situations that are.
I was interested in your phrase, pre-retirement adventure, yes. And I wasn't quite sure which part was which.
Well, it was, I just retired officially July 1st of this year. This was 5 years ago that we made this move. And I've been an LCA pastor situation that's called, or category that's called pastor without, on leave from call, that means in a full-time congregation. But in that category, you can do different things. So I was doing this part-time chaplaincy work. And then later on, they developed this interim pastor, as a call to special service, and I was actually called by the by our synod, our Minnesota synod, too, in that capacity. But before that time, that was not true of our situation.
I have a brief question for Ann, and that would be, if I wanted to get involved in hospice, whom would I call? How do you get in touch with that kind of a program?
I think if you looked in your phone book, under hospice, and hopefully there'd be one in that area. If not, if you're in a small town, I think to go to a larger town.
Is yours worked through a hospital?
No. We're on our
own. Some towns, I think, the local hospital is. Do I see another hand over this way?
There's one.
Okay, yes. David.
I found interesting what Amos said in relation to what Joyce said. You spoke about sort of bringing other people into this business and kind of giving them a skill and a teaching. And Amos was talking about printing. If you ever read a want ad, virtually every job is described in the most intimidating language, you know. And I swear, virtually none of us would feel qualified to do anything. But I know I've had jobs that I've happened into, in which if I made up the job description, I could make it seem like it took a PhD to do it. And I think that it's so critically important for a lot of people to kind of get a foot in the door somewhere. You know, it may not be have any relation to where vocationally they end up. But there's something that happens when, for instance, you can write a resume that says, you know, I can do something that most other people can't do. It's not that most other people couldn't do it, but that I can do it. And I think that, that's one thing. You know, I'm fairly young. But I think that one thing that people can do who have skills in any area, you know, mechanics or administration or whatnot, is when the opportunity comes along to allow someone to learn something from them, you can do 1,000 times more good than any priest or minister or rabbi or psychologist, I think, if you take the opportunity and the occasion.
Appreciate that, David. And when you were speaking, I was thinking of the origami class the other day, where the Japanese students from Concordia were teaching this paper folding to make cranes and boxes and so on, and I was participating. And I noticed that many of those around the table were saying things like, I don't think I can do this, or please help me. And yet when it was over, we had all learned something new, and not everybody can do origami. Right? You know, I can now. Go back to Meridian, Idaho.
Jeanette knows not everybody can what is it, spin? Right?
Yeah.
You read the longest one.
You'll make it, David, if you keep on.
David, I think
I blame it on the yard.
Yeah, Ruben has a comment.
And that is, you don't stop learning.
That's right.
But if I think back to the things I have learned, some informal training classes and some just by reading, since I have retired, it's probably more than I learned the 10 years before I retired. And if you don't stop learning, you can also find a lot of interesting things to do and worthwhile things.
Yeah. And maybe let's just brainstorm for a bit, like that origami thing. Just mention anything that comes to mind, something that you've learned to do in the last whatever number of years. Just, yes, Corolla.
At 59, Paul and I built a house.
Hey, that's a great beginning.
The architect was, that we had also designed this room.
Okay.
Willis Shelbert. Uh-huh. He designed a house for us, and we built most of it.
Beautiful, yes.
I'm just going to say that for anyone, that if they
don't have certain interests, I'm not thinking about volunteering necessarily, but it could be that, but it could be otherwise, of having hobbies or interests or things of interest after you retire. I've known some that retired, they sat down in a chair, started reading paper, watching TV, and some of them in a year and a half, they were dead. And some of them, I had a brother-in-law, he was bored to death. Well, I think back, and not necessarily through my choosing, but on necessity, partly because of my wife's health and all. She almost died when her son was born. We were on a farm, and course of events, we were forced to leave that because she wasn't strong enough there. No electricity, no running water, so on and so forth. What does a guy with eighth grade education, a farm boy, do when he comes to the big city and try and get a job? No references, don't know anybody, so on. And you just, if you just have the encourage and incentive and just send out and you learn something, you maybe start from the bottom.
All right.
I got a job in an electric motor repair shop. I've seen the inside of one electric motor in my lifetime. And I was able to fix that and make it run. And I told the boss that, so he hired me. And then they proceeded to teach me some things that have been invaluable throughout my lifetime. Now I'm just saying this as some things. You don't know how to do something, there's ways to learn. And different people have different incentives. And everybody has some, talents.
Yes.
And many of them, they just don't have kind of an incentive to get out and go and find out what it is. Do you like, you interested in something? Go on, you can learn, and boy, it's interesting what you learn to do.
Yeah. I've never polished.
Well, no, I don't have enough time, that's all.
Yeah. This was the first time in my life I've polished a semi-precious stone over there at the lapidary. Boy, I'm proud as can be of that little gem, for sure. Let's just brainstorm a bit, but go ahead, Dan.
I was going to say, I learned to do stained glass in the last 3 years. Fred built us a greenhouse window in the home, and I made stained glass windows. And now I've got orders. Don't want to be filling them, but I've done one for a new home that a friend's building. I really don't want to go into the business with it. It's great fun to do.
Yeah. So build a house over here, stained glass windows, just a few other ideas of things that you...
Go ahead. I'm going to do wood carving.
Wood carving.
And I have more time?
Yeah.
I have started. Awesome. I want to continue.
Yeah, let's hear some more. Go ahead, in the back.
I got involved in oral history project in a small town. Unfortunately, I moved from there, so I can't continue it. But it was a program put through the library, and we actually recorded elderly people telling experiences and of their early life, particularly those in the rural community. And it was a marvelous learning experience. Plus, some of these dear folks didn't think they had one thing of interest in their life that anybody else would like to hear. And when they learned that their tapes were played for other people, it grew, and some of these elderly people took part in programs in the grade schools. And the fact that little children were so fascinated with their stories just really boosted the ego of the upper elderly, not too well-to-do people who just really sat back in the community and thought they could come on to do that.
Who organized the program that you...
The library system, our county system.
Yeah.
I presume it was just a favorite thing for our... library director.
Sure. A couple more like that. Somebody else work? Yes.
One comment up here.
About the church doing things. And a few years ago, there was a book, Tapestry, that came out from the ALC, which was a marvelous book that...
Bob Bachman.
Will Bachman.
Will
Bachman.
Yeah.
Bill Bachman.
But it was stories about different things that happened in churches. Now, what a rich heritage we have of the things that happened in individual churches. And if somebody could really hone in on that, you know, I mean, it would be a wealth of beautiful stories and history of the church in America.
Okay, a couple of other quick statements, then we'll be time to go upstairs, please.
I'm very impressed with all of these comments. I'd just like to throw one other side of the coin around. I found when I retired, my friends would come up to me and say, are you keeping busy? And if I said, oh, I fall in the trap and say, oh yes, I'm doing this and this, good.
Yeah.
And the feeling was that I got out of this, if you're busy, you know, you're worthwhile. And I'd just like to emphasize the other side, we're worthwhile because of who we are in God's plan and all, whether we're just busy or not. Now, that's not to detract at all from, you know, all the things we're doing, but I don't think we ought to fall into that trap necessarily of busyness.
Yeah, well said. There was a hand toward the back, I think, pink dress, the other side. Oh, yes, I'm sorry.
Well, I go in the mother of flowers, and in our little town there is no such thing as a flower shop. And many times they want the arrangement probably for just a dinner table and for the church and their other occasions. I have done a lot of this just by people asking me if I could make an arrangement for something, and so I do it either other than grown flowers, garden flowers, or sometimes orchid flowers, otherwise just artificial ones.
Beautiful. Yeah. Anyone else? Yours? Anyone that maybe hasn't spoken before? Yes.
In the back. I live in a small community and it's poor, really a depressed area, and I think we all have a lot to offer to children, to teach them, to help them. I'm kind of old, and I took a position on the school board. The replacement, but now I'm going to run now this time. I really felt I was too old, but yet I know a lot of things, and I am interested in that children learn. It's hard for a little child, and we have so much to offer them. We have the time.
Okay, thank you for sharing. The gentleman in the front there.
I'm very much impressed with all the things I've heard this evening. I'm very much heartened to find that people are really adjusting very beautifully in their elderly years. I find myself in a kind of quandary. I happen to be in a profession where, which we're always pouring on the students in schools, but they don't appreciate. It's like George Bernard Shaw says, shouldn't waste youth on the young people. You shouldn't waste history on students. And I retired on August the 15th at age 70, and I've been teaching all these years, and I can't break out of that mold. But I'm enjoying it. So perhaps this is kind of a dissident note, because I haven't found anything else that I would rather do.
Have you continued teaching? Is that what you're saying?
Well, I'm doing a little teaching, and I'm writing the university's history.
And where are you teaching?
In Pullman, Washington State.
Well, thank you all for sharing. I would like to conclude with reading again that prayer with which we began tonight, and also which was shared across the way. Teach us always to remember your gifts with thanksgiving, O God. May your liberating love empower us for the future. Grant us the courage of Ruth to leave behind the old and familiar, the hope of Jeremiah to invest in the future, and the strength of Esther to take risks on behalf of others. Through Christ our Lord, amen. A special thank you to our panelists and to you for coming.